Hello, No Code Nation. I'm Ayush, and you're listening to my No Code story. And this is not your typical entrepreneurship podcast. Here, you get to listen to real people who are building cool stuff, all without writing a single line of code. This is the future of independent entrepreneurship, and you have a front row seat. All right, welcome to Story 16. Before we get into today's story, I wanted to share a few things. This podcast has been live now, obviously 15 episodes have been out, but we've been live for about 4 months now. And listeners from over 44 countries have contributed to thousands of listens of the podcast. So first of all, a huge, huge thank you to all of you who've taken time out of your day to listen to the stories that we've put out. Over the past 4 months, there have been a lot of great things that have happened. I met people that I wouldn't have met before, started building an audience, and it was a proof point for myself to start something new this year. So I'm really glad that I went down this path. But there have also been a lot of not so good things. Consistency has been an issue for me, balancing the requirements for my day job and also cultivating this as a hobby. I haven't been able to post as frequently as I wanted on Twitter, create other types of content, and the whole space of audio as a platform has really accelerated, and it's really bonkers what has happened over the past 4 months. If you look at platforms like Twitter Spaces, I think Spotify has something called Green Room now, Facebook has something else. I'm really finding it hard to keep track of all these things. And of course, there are other niche platforms like Racket that are coming out with shorter form content. So I'm kind of struggling a little bit there to keep up to pace with all of the improvements. But what does this mean? This means a few things. I'm recommitting to publishing content at least once a week, hopefully more frequently than that. But I will be doing shorter episodes with less editing. The main barrier so far has been just the time that it takes to get these episodes edited and out to all of you. So I'm trying to get more of that done during the recording stages. And then I also used to write a newsletter at nocodeweekly.com. I'm going to try to restart that. And I actually want to see if I could set up like some kind of a mastermind group. So if someone out there is participating in a mastermind group in the no-code space and you have an open spot, let me know. I have a few other people that want to partner up and just jam about the no-code space and maybe work on content collaboratively once a week or something like that. So that'd be pretty cool. Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to share. There have been some good things, a lot of good things, some not so good things, and who knows, I might try something new as well over the next few months. All right, let's get into today's episode now. Today's episode is about having fun and writing great copy while making really bad products. Bad Unicorn was started as an experiment which truly flipped the script, and I'm excited to share my conversation with Whit Anderson, who discusses some nuggets from some of his craziest experiments, like delivering pizzas at random times, his latest course called How to Hype, and why he jumped into Bad Unicorn full-time. Let's get into it right away. Here's my conversation with Whit.
I'm Whit, and this is my no-code story.
All right, you ready, Whit?
Let's do it.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for taking the time to be on. Bad Unicorn is one of those concepts that I really find intriguing and endearing at the same time. So I wouldn't know how to go about doing something like this. But at the same time, seeing you do this so successfully really makes me want to see what I can learn and how you could embed sort of attention into the marketing mix and make it sort of a default by inverting the problem, right? So I really love what you've done here. Why don't you tell our audience where your story starts? So how did you get introduced to this space and where are you now?
Yeah, so I guess I kind of started in college. I built a physical product and I was just trying to like dive. It was Amazon Alexa Dot with like a R2-D2 within an R2-D2 head. And so I 3D printed it. I think I realized like a lot of lessons as far as how tough physical products were. And so I wanted to dive into the realm of software, but I didn't know how to code. The time to like learn to code was pretty tough. And maybe that was just like laziness. But kind of through that like laziness, I found Webflow was the first no-code tool I found and started just building, or I guess like cloning sites to like of templates I liked and then kind of like adjusting them. And so I started with more of a learn by just like pulling like good templates and adjusting them, seeing all like the elements of the side panels And that's kind of how I taught myself. And then from there, I was just like building small products and shipping them. Yeah. And now I co-founded something called Bad Unicorn, which is a product studio / newsletter where we drop bad business ideas or bad or funny business ideas every other Friday. And we build products, we ship them to our audience. Some of them are duds, which is kind of the point with bad ideas. And some of them get a little bit of traction, which is fun too.
That's awesome. So what did you major in with in college? So,
majored in finance, and so nothing I use really in my previous day job or now really applies, other than maybe some high level concepts. Corporate finance never really intrigued me. I did finance because I liked math, but when I started getting into like my core subjects, I was like, this isn't what I really want to be doing.
Which is kind of the point, right, of no code tech, is that anyone, irrespective of background, is able to kind of transform themselves into a tech software entrepreneur. I love what you guys have done with Bad Unicorn. What was the genesis of the idea? Like, how did you guys, who thought of creating these bad products? Or was it just that you discovered that you're an expert at creating bad products? What was going on?
So what happened was, I guess the whole story. So yeah, I told you, I was building these products at first. I thought I wanted to be like a B2B SaaS like person. Like I saw that B2B SaaS like made money, it worked. And so a lot of the products I was building were like B2B SaaS tools or attempting to be like an MVP of one. And so launched those kind of with not much success. When I launched on Product Hunt and Twitter, heard lots of crickets, didn't have a large following. And then eventually I built a product called Random Pizza, which was my first product actually like made money on the internet. And the concept was kind of exactly what it sounds like. You pay $20 a month, and then every month you get two pizzas randomly delivered to your house, where I order the pizza. At the first it was manual, so I like manually ordered every pizza through either calling it in or doing like the Domino's like online ordering app. And so got a little bit of love on Product Hunt and Twitter through that product.
So people would just have a pizza show up at their doorstep randomly at some point during the month?
Randomly, yeah. So you'd just be like at work, and so this is started pre-COVID and kind of like quickly blended into COVID. So at first it was like you could choose between your workplace or your home, and you just like you said your preferences. So it's like I'm typically at work from, most people are at work from 10 to 3 at least, usually before and after. But I would say like this is the time gap, you can send it to me at work, and you can send it to me at like 6 to 8 for like my home address. And so yeah, people would just be like working or on a call, and then like they would get a call from someone, be like, hey, I'm outside with your pizza. And people would be like, I didn't order a pizza. And they're like, oh, and they're like, it's random pizza. And so that was the product was wacky, it was weird. There's like lots of serendipity involved, where it's like pre-give yourself like a gift or like a surprise for later. But anyways, it was one of those ideas that was like mostly silly or bad, and it's not like a perfect product. But like some people like saw value in it. Like some people are like, it's crazy, but like I want to do it. And we have people
I can see it would appeal to a certain type of personality, right? And the surprise element really gets people going.
Yeah, it's definitely different. It's a cool feeling. We eventually automated Random Pizza, and so I never got to experience it. I just actually got to like send the, but recently, like in the last couple months, I've like gotten some random pizzas, which has been like a good feeling. Yeah. So we've had people that have been subscribed for like a year at this point.
Wow.
Not a ton of subscribers. Nice. Yeah. But just like a couple of people that have like stayed on long term.
That's awesome. So let's talk about this a little bit more, because you said you did it manually and then you automated it now. So if someone were to order a random pizza, where would they go?
So you have to go to randompizza.io is the website. There's a type form or there's a Gumroad link where you sign up, and then a type form box to fill out your preferences as far as times, addresses, pizza type. And so that's kind of what it looks like. And then, so at first it was all manual, doing them in kind of like in batches where I think I had like 55, at the peak of Random Pizza, I had like 55 signups, which is like the Product Hunt launch and Twitter. And yeah, so that was all manual. It was super hard to like manually like copy and paste and organize that based on like time zones and lots of different things. But eventually partnered up with Gil, this guy named Gil, and he helped create like I think there's a little bit of like low code involved, but we found a wrapper for like a Domino's API And he automated the process based off our like incoming like database. And so, yeah, that helped.
Awesome. Awesome. So this product has been live for about a year and you have a few customers, but the important thing is it seems like it's sticky to a certain personality type, right? And I love the copy that that you put on the site too. And just your style of writing copy for all of the startups, it's really an art, I feel. It doesn't come across as something serious. And that's, I think, the piece that pulls people in. So tell me about how you started to do that, right? Did you always write copy for even the R2D2 product? Did you have it like up on a website somewhere?
Yeah, I think it was, with copywriting, I always say forever, I've said like, I'm an awful writer. And then I like wrote the copy on Random Pizza and I spent a lot of time on writing it. And when I launched, like the main response, like beyond the idea was people were like, oh, the copy on the site is like great. I really like the copy, hilarious. Cause lots of people can just enjoy the site just based off like reading the copy and thinking about the idea, like even if they didn't sign up. And so that's also kind of bled into Bad Unicorn in a way where we take copy, we spend a lot of time on like our copyright. And it's not like we try not to be like too generic with our headers or our subheaders or even our pricing page. And so, yeah. So copy, I guess I didn't realize I was a good writer like until this point, but I think it came from liking comedy. So I really like stand up, obviously like comedy, like television or movies, but I think it came from that's the stand up where set up the joke or like, some sort of narrative, set up the joke, like punchline. And so right. I think that's kind of what's happening on that side. And it probably happens like accidentally on some other sites where, kind of like set it up where like comedy comes in threes as far as, I don't know, just random things, I guess I picked up.
Yeah. And it kind of blends into the Bad Unicorn site as well, like you said. I want to talk about a few products that you guys have launched. First, do you want to tell me about how you met your co-founder? Because you've co-founded this with Ash, is that right?
Yeah. So Ash from Leeds, UK, we joined a digital virtual mastermind group called 0 to 1. And the premise was every single Friday at 4 p.m., everyone shows up in a Zoom. Previously, it was in person, but kind of during COVID is when we saw a lot of growth. And so, we all show up at 4 p.m. We come with three things: what you did last week, what you plan on doing next week, and a cool product you saw this past week. And usually that was like a no code product or something that helped us build better for the most part. And so, through that group, I met Ash. And so we did like a bunch of months where we were doing our things on our side. I was building side projects. Ash was building side projects. And then when the idea of Bad Unicorn came up, we hopped on a Zoom and talked about like collaborating just based off our skill sets.
And what has the experience been like working with a co-founder remote? This is going to be possibly more of the norm going forward. Are there specific things that you would advise people looking to either work with a team or work with a co-founder remote that they implement as sort of habits on a day-to-day basis?
I think so. I hadn't really co-founded with like anyone. So I was like doing a bunch of stuff solo. So I guess I don't have the perspective of like working with someone like in an office or in a desk space. But my perspective working with Ash is it's been incredible. It's been really, really cool. I think being in different locations physically brings like different perspective to even like idea generation where it's like, this is really popular, especially for what we're trying to build, which is like these trendy or products that are trending on Twitter or something. If he's in like London and I'm in like Atlanta, if both of us are hearing about it, like, okay, it's probably a big deal. Like if we launch this product, it's going to get, everyone's going to understand like the concept. So there's something around that where it's not, we're not just like thinking of ideas in like this Atlanta bubble or in this Dallas bubble or in this Silicon Valley bubble. And so I feel like we're a little open-minded as far as products. As far as organization, we start with like one call a week and have like worked ourselves up to 2 to 3 calls. 2 to 3 calls a week as far as like talking about what's happening this week. This is like where we get in the nitty gritty. And then this meeting's where we actually like build the product or edit the copy or edit the website.
Makes sense. And it kind of shows the variety shows in the types of products. I want to read out a few of the product names from Bad Unicorn. So the first one on there is Musk on Mars. And The premise is you could reserve any day in the future if you think Musk will land on Mars by that date or on that date and for a dollar. And then if he does, then you keep the entire pot, which is such a funny concept. I'd see a ton of people doing that. There's Meme University, there's Scarebnb, Unslack, Dollar Doer Club. I love all of these. I want to dig into one in particular, Elon stocks, because this is one that I saw back when Elon started toying with, you know, Dogecoin and Bitcoin and so on. And I recommended it before I knew you or knew of you. I recommended it to my friends because it was such a great concept where I had a couple of friends that had just started trading and they were trading based off of trends, the trends being when Elon tweets, right? Or what he tweets. So I recommended it to a few friends, and you know, I think a couple subscribed to a trial and so on. But I really like how you'd set this up to be a text message based thing, because of the instantaneous nature of how people would need to react. Could you talk about a bit about the stack that you use to set that up, and also just in general, has your stack typically been sort of a no code stack for all of your products?
Yeah, almost every one of our products has been mostly no code. Occasionally, like we collab with different like creators. And so if they're a developer and we want something like more custom built, then like they'll maybe like add it and we'll embed it to the website. But for the most part, like all of our projects are no code. And then as far as Elon stocks, the stack is Card as a landing page. So we either use Card or Webflow for landing pages, depending on how difficult the site like layout or envisioning it is. But yeah, for this one, Card, there's MailerLite for the email submission. There's Twilio for the text message sending. There's Zapier to send like a welcome message and to kind of send our number to Airtable database. And so yeah, and there's Airtable is the last thing. So yeah, so again, Card, Zapier, Twilio, Airtable are the main ones. And then we also use like Airtable to like do email capture.
And have you started gravitating towards certain no code tools? And if someone's starting out and they want to build this, I've seen a lot of people talk about the startup studio mentality, right? Especially with no code, where you can fire MVPs out at a regular clip. Are you gravitating more towards certain types of tools? What is your sort of sense for where the space is going in terms of maturity?
Yeah, I think the space is going towards, there's going to be a lot of tools that are like really, really easy to use and a lot of tools that are really complicated to use. And probably the ones in the middle, I mean, maybe they'll still exist, but I think their popularity will be less, where it's like, you want to be the tool that's like, you can build a site super, super easily and it looks really good, which I think Card is like the best for that. It's the cheapest, it's the fastest, it's the easiest. And then like, as of now, there's like Webflow and Bubble kind of at the top, and Bubble is more for people who want to build apps, and Webflow is more for people that want to build beautiful websites. And they're slowly building more features for apps. They're kind of lagging behind as far as that aspect. And I guess those are the earliest ones too. But yeah, as far as like the best stack for people like just getting into no code, I think like Ash and I say this thing called like a master. Our master stack is usually Card, Zapier, Typeform, and like Airtable. We use those tools like a lot. And you'll find when we do like our threads, and like, this is our stack of every product we've ever built. Like we have threads where we've shared like every product stack we've done. And most of the time Card and like Typeform is like somewhere in there, and Zapier's doing some sort of random automation send. Yeah.
And do you document all of this for each and every product?
Yeah. Yeah. So every probably like 5-10 products, I'll just like redo a thread where it's like, these are all our projects. This is the idea. This is how we built it with the stack. This is how much it cost. Yeah. So I think I've done 2 threads so far, both just like did all the products, and and most of our products, it's kind of a thread on like how to build products for less than $100. So far we haven't really built any products for like, I mean, maybe $60 is like the most we've spent for a drop, which is crazy how cheap that is. Cheap and fast.
Yeah, and it's great to test out ideas. I love the latest one, Creator Class. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're hoping to help creators achieve as a result of this, and what's the direction for Bad Unicorn going forward?
Yeah, so creator class was kind of, we had this kind of cheat sheet course, this some people call it like an OS. Like we had this like course, like we're working to build, and we have a good baseline as far as like, these are the things we do. These are some of our like quick hacks. This is how we build our products at Bad Unicorn. These are the things we look at when we're like about to launch. And so like a bunch of these like quick cheat sheet check off style templates. And so we wanted to launch that. We're like, how are we going to like, what's the way to market this? How do we launch? And so we do parody sites a lot of times. So why not parody like some sort of education product? And so, yeah, we wanted a parody masterclass. Kind of within that masterclass, parody is our like real product. And so I'm not sure, maybe some people were confused if our cheat sheet course is real or fake. But yeah, so yeah, we launched that, and we wanted to like add different creators where like it's more like just super simple, not like a huge like book or ebook or course or, but just something that's like super simple where they like record a video at the top. Here's their cheat sheet for doing X activity. And then like, there's like five sections or something. So not sure if that's going to like come into existence. We might like reach out to different creators to see if they like are interested in doing that. But yeah, that was kind of like the high level thoughts for that project. But yeah. Right now we have a pre-order for a course called How to Hype that comes out June 1st. And so yeah. Excited to kind of like curate that content and also put it up in the next month or so.
Yeah. One thing I can see that would be really interesting is targeting people that want to go down this creator path, but are stuck in their 9-to-5, right? Or, mm-hmm. or they're working their 9-to-5 because they love it, but they want to try things out on the side. I know you recently said that you started to focus on Bad Unicorn full time. Do you want to talk a little bit about that journey and what you were doing before alongside Bad Unicorn, and what made you pivot to take the leap?
Yeah, I think, both Ash and I for 8 months were full-time and working on Bad Unicorn on the side. And so we were still able to like kind of launch a product every other week and keep our cadence. Yeah, and then kind of the decision to go full-time was kind of just like a timing thing. I worked at Techstars before, which I loved working at Techstars, but kind of quickly into Bad Unicorn, I realized like, I really love this thing, and I could see myself doing Bad Unicorn forever or at least for a very, very long time. And so, yeah, so I was like, I kind of wanted to like plant seeds, like try some experiments and see if I could prove that, or at least to myself, that like Bad Unicorn can be like a business, because it's kind of tough to monetize bad ideas. And so, yeah, the decision was kind of like, I want to be like full-time soon. My contract kind of had just ended, and I was like, I want to like give this thing a real shot. So yeah, hopefully it lasts for a long time. Who knows? I might have to like pick up some like small side gigs to make ends meet in the short term. But for now, I get to wake up and just work on Bad Unicorn, which is kind of all I wanted.
That's awesome. And I think the point, at least from my outside in sort of view with Bad Unicorn, is not so much the products themselves, but it is the storytelling, right? Which I think you guys do a really great job of lightening the mood and getting the point across without making much of a fuss. And a lot of founders would really benefit from that kind of insight. So I think in addition to, you know, having creators learn about tool sets and stacks and how to think about scaling their startup, there's something to messaging that I think they can really learn from both mm-hmm. of you. So I really feel, I love the idea that, you know, you've gone full-time on this. Could you tell me a bit more about what your thoughts are? Like, are you going to keep going down the products path, or are you going to focus more on courses, and what's the thought process behind that?
Yeah, I think in like in the future, I think Bad Unicorn like does a bunch of different things. I don't know if it's all different types of, because we're a weird mix of, we're a product studio and we're like dropping products, but also our products are basically our form of content. We're like, even if we've got tons of subscribers that have never like paid us like any money, and they just enjoy like reading the content, almost just a regular newsletter, like just scrolling through our websites, maybe laughing occasionally, and then kind of going about their day. And so we're kind of this mix of product and like media in a way. And so, mm-hmm. and like in the kind of the medium or the media aspect of this, we've thought about, I don't know, more content. So don't know if that's podcasts, I don't know if that's like video tutorials. I don't know if that's write-ups or more writing. But yeah, there's like that path of kind of more content to like help different creators create. And so, yeah, we've been able to figure out that right cadence for building like 18 products. And so we can kind of share those like quick tips and lessons learned and actually like nitty gritty tutorials where it's like zero to Elon Stocks product. And so that's like an option. I think we're pretty steadfast as far as like always having like a deep product, like product core where we're like dropping a new product every 2 weeks. It's like, we learn a ton through the process and we always like, we like up our skills depending on what the idea is. We try to pick ideas that are tools or things we've like never used before. And so as far as like no code products, we've tried a lot of tools and we found the ones that we like. And for like some of the new ones we like added recently are like ones where we're like, okay, we can use this in the future a bunch of times now. And so, yeah, some of the product studio is like, yes, you get lots of products and people get to say, hey, those people are taking a lot of action. Like, let's look at them a little bit. But there's like the muscle of like you're just adding like so many more like things to your tool belt. And so, yeah, most of our products have like somewhat similar stacks, but also there's like a new tool involved or there's something that like that we've like learned in the process.
Right. And if a creator is thinking about jumping into creating a new product or bringing a new idea to life, they usually start to focus on the products they already know and just double down on that, which I think from a time standpoint makes a lot of sense because you're so much faster if you already know the product. Yeah. Are there ones that you would advise people avoid outright if they're starting out on their no-code journey? And on the flip side, are there one or two new products that you've just picked up that you feel people should try out?
Yeah. I mean, none to really avoid. Like, I think everyone's going to kind of find their tools they like, and they're going to kind of stick with those ones. We're like, I'm going to be tough as far as like website builders. Like, it's going to be tough to pull me away from Webflow. Like, that's the one I've always learned. And that's the one I've like invested a lot of time in. And so even if a different like website builder like came up, like, they're probably not going to like persuade me to go over to them. So like, that's going to happen for a bunch of these different website builders where people are going to find their one they like. Maybe it's Card, maybe it's Webflow, maybe it's, there's a bunch of them, but they'll probably stick with them for like their creator journey. Yeah. None just like specifically avoid. I think there's like this like learning curve on all of them. Like I said, Card's the easiest. I keep on saying Card, Webflow, Bubble. Those are the main ones that are kind of in the space, but yeah, Card's the easiest. That's the one I would definitely start out with. Webflow has a high learning curve, but you can, I don't know, within like enough time inside the document, you can like adjust it and fix it and make it look pretty enough. Even my sites have like tons of like people who are real website designers will look at my websites and be like, oh, this is like disgusting. Like you definitely formatted this wrong or you're doing this wrong, but it looks like the same on my mobile device. And then Bubble's like the highest learning curve. So it's, even when I've kind of given it a try, I built like some small apps on it, but it definitely has a high learning curve, but high potential. So none to avoid, just got to know kind of what you're looking to build.
Okay. And as you're coming up with these ideas, what's your process? Is there a process?
Yeah. So we kind of figured out like, what is a bad unicorn idea? And this wasn't like obvious from the start. It came from like the first three to five ideas were like, what's a bad unicorn idea? Like it's like first like funny, which is like kind of objective. Like that's on us to figure out like if something is funny. It's usually like functional. So like we like for users to be able to do X and get Y result. It's like kind of like objective, like a bad idea, which kind of goes into that funny one in a way. And then I like to say like there's some sort of like weird human behavior we're pointing to. I really like products that are like point out some, like, why are people doing this? And like, so we built a product around it. For example, like Elon Stocks, for example, is a product that texts you every single time Elon Musk tweets about a stock. Like, we only built that tool because there was tons of articles in all these different media outlets. They're like, Etsy stock price shoots up 11% in a day just because Elon Musk tweeted, I kind of like Etsy. And like, he tweeted something so simple, but so many people take, I kind of like Etsy for like, oh, they're like, stock is undervalued, I'm going to buy their stock. And so we only built that because of that weird human behavior where it's like he was just tweeting about stocks and people were just buying them. And so we built a product based off that behavior. And so we're always trying to look for those where people are doing like weird things, like kind of unexplainable things, and we built some sort of commentary based off them.
Yeah, and there's kind of a timing and relevance aspect to this as well, because with Elon's stocks, it's very much about timing, right? So there was and it kind of also came back like a boomerang back at you guys, which is what I noticed after you guys came out with Elon's stocks. Did he stop tweeting or something? Did he get wind of the product?
Yeah, it was really funny. We built the product, it got a lot of engagement, got a lot of signups, and then like maybe like 3 days later, 4 days later after launching, he tweets like, "I'm gonna be off Twitter for a while," and me and Ash are like, "Oh gosh!" Like right when we build this product, we have some steam, and Elon Musk like does this to us. But it actually worked even better because he tweeted like 32 hours later. So he tweeted like, "I'm gonna be off Twitter for a while," which everyone, friends, text me. It's like, "Oh, sorry about like Elon stocks," and it's like, it's fine. He'll be back on Twitter at some point. But then like he can't stay away from Twitter. And I think he's that kind of guy where he knows he's got like a rampant fan page and fan base and yeah, he like kind of like sharing memes, sharing random Dogecoin tweets. But his break from Twitter didn't last a long time.
Yeah. What are some lessons that you want to share with founders that you've learned founding your own business? Is there some aspect of funding? Because I know you talked about, you know, each product costing below a certain threshold to put out, which I think a lot of founders would be interested in, that concept of being able to just create products with minimal extra investment and so on, and validate an idea before they got to seek funding. What's the thought process for you on that front with respect to Bad Unicorn? Are you guys going to keep sort of bootstrapping this? Are you guys going to look to formalize this a bit more into some kind of a product studio that allows founders to partner with you to create stuff? What's the idea there?
Yeah. So we're kind of in the middle as far as deciding like bootstrapped or like raise money. And so, yeah, like looking at all as far as like raise money, like there's, I guess the biggest value is like we're able to do a lot more experiments. We're able to build like crazier products, like experiment with like paid acquisition. And so it's kind of like a time you get like immediate money to like try a lot of experiments, and you have like runway for both founders to be fully focused and work in the business. And like kind of the bootstrapped is like slow growth, but kind of we got to find some ways to fund the business and allow us to like try some experiments. Like I don't know if just building products, if we only just build products every other Friday, I don't know if like Bad Unicorn grows in a big business. And so we're kind of evaluating it. Like right now we're kind of chatting about like what like an angel writing like a small check would look like, and what exactly we do with that money, how do we deploy it, and what we'd expect from like deploying that money. And really the main thing we're trying to focus on is like audience growth. Like Bad Unicorn is a better business the larger our audience is. And so since we're building products that are like inherently shareable at some weeks, then the more audience we have, there's more like kind of gasoline to pour on the fire as far as audience. And so, yeah, that's kind of a main focus is getting more email subscribers.
Awesome. And I want to kind of go to a separate, maybe a more serious note. So one of your, on your Twitter profile page, you have this saying, which is the noblest art is that of making others happy. So there's a sense that behind, you know, all of the humor, there's maybe kind of a more thoughtful person as well, right? What are your thoughts around, first of all, how has the whole COVID timeframe been for you as, you know, being a 9-to-5 employee and then, you know, switching to this full time? And are there some, I don't want to say mental health tips, but just general, you know, individual management tips that you want to share with founders that are maybe looking to go full time? They're not really sure about their direction yet, or anyone really that's starting a new company. What are some things you want to share with them about the mental process?
Yeah, I think as far as like being an internet creator, I think there's like two things that like I've identified within like myself, and maybe this applies to other people, but two things I identified with myself when going through this like like, okay, I'm gonna become an internet creator. And I mean, I guess that's more of like a product builder, but I like realized like there's this inherent insecurity. Well, I guess first off, there's like, I don't know how to build products. So like I had to figure out how to build products. So kind of, if you're gonna be an internet creator, just like decide your realm, if it's design, if it's video content, if it's TikTok. So like figure out how to do that thing, which is easier said than done, but that's like taking courses, watching videos, following people. So for me, that was no code. And then two, like this inherent like insecurity of like being a creator, where like you're always gonna have like, whenever you press send on anything, especially near like, yeah, there's just like this insecurity aspect, like, oh, people are gonna hate it. Like people are gonna like aren't gonna use it, or people are gonna like criticize me. And I did that a bunch with like a ton of my early product drops, and it made me, I guess I eventually dropped most of them, but I dropped them in a far later cadence. So like I probably had products that were like basically done, and then I'd wait like 2 more weeks before I like posted on Twitter or posted on Product Hunt. And it like slowed the learning like cycle. Like I should have like dropped it immediately, gone to the next, like people didn't like it or it wasn't good, and I went to the next one. And so I think there's like the like learn how to like do your thing. Like for this is like no code, for I guess is no code. And then try to get like feel out those emotions of like what are these insecurities? Like people don't really care when I like people don't really care if I drop a product and it's like not that good. Like they just go about their lives. Yeah. So those are two things that are like always top of mind when I talk with any kind of creator. If you're sending out a newsletter, if you're dancing on TikTok, or yeah, if you're filming a podcast, it's always tough to kind of like send something out in the world, and people are now like can judge you, even though they're most likely not.
I love that you touched on that at that level of depth. I really had a lot of fun with chatting today. I wish you guys the best, and we've got to have you back, you know, in a few weeks or maybe a few months to talk about the progress with Bad Unicorn as well. Why don't you give our audience a handoff to where they can find you, and if they have any questions, where do they reach you?
Yeah, so Bad Unicorn. I'd love if anyone is interested, sign up for the email newsletter. It's at badunicorn.vc is the website. Then on Twitter, there's at badunicornvc, and I'm Whit, W-H-I-T, 4-T-H is my name on Twitter. And yeah, my DMs are always open as far as questions or bad ideas. I always love if anyone kind of comes in my DMs with a funny or bad idea. We'll always add it to the backlog or jam about it. But yeah, those are my socials.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And thanks for being on. I know, you know, most of the no code audience that I follow on Twitter have great things to say about you. So I wish you guys the very best, and, you know, hope to hear more about your success very soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. I had a really good time jamming, and hopefully we can keep in contact more.
All right, that was the show. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed it and got a ton out of it. If you did, there are two things you need to do. Number one, make sure you subscribe to the show to get notified when a new no-code story drops. And number two, I want to ask you a favor. Who's the one person you know who would absolutely benefit from hearing this story? Text them right now and send them to mynocodestory.com and reference this episode. Maybe they're an entrepreneur, maybe they can use this episode to level up at their job, or maybe they're just someone who loves creating new things. Do it. Subscribe and then send them the text. Make a difference. Thanks again, and I'll see you on the next one.